The Olympics are upon us, and if you think politics won't be on display in South Korea, think again. We'll talk about it on The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are The Uprising, with Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
Black Lives Matter, the Antifa movement, is interested in preserving the fabric of America.
This is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. Tim Donner with you this week, joined by our international correspondent and UK editor for LibertyNation.com, Mark Angelides, who's been overseeing the special edition of LibertyNation.com on politics and the Olympics, up now on our site. And Mark, welcome. Much to discuss outside of the actual athletic competition in the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, which by the way, Pyeongchang, which is actually confusing to a lot of people who will undoubtedly mistake it for the capital of North Korea, Pyongyang. But the modern Olympic movement has had to contend with wars and boycotts and protests and walkouts and even terrorist attacks, and we'll talk about them in a while. But let me start by putting a basic question to you. With the uniquely divisive Donald Trump in the White House and terrorism on the rise, particularly in Europe, but also the U.S. and across the globe, to what extent and in what ways will you expect politics to affect these Olympics?
The Olympics has always been political, literally always, from the choosing of which nation to host to the inevitable controversy about athletes, whether they're qualified to run, whether they're the right gender, often with nods to human rights records. So it's always very, very political in how even a Summer Olympics or a Winter Olympics gets started. In more recent history, I guess it's become the actual event of the Olympics has become a form of soft diplomacy, where the depending on which countries are offering support and, of course, investment, because they do cost a lot of money to host.
That's for sure. I mean, the Olympics have bankrupted many of the nations that have not bankrupted the nation, but have put a serious dent in their financial well-being.
They really have. There's a certain amount of return of investment expected for an Olympics, which the countries that are hosting them are desperate to get, so that they spend money out of their own coffers. They get investments from other countries to host the things. And if these if the return on investment over the next 4 to 6 years, which is when they hope to keep getting it based on different tourism inputs especially, if it doesn't materialize, then it's basically the taxpayer that's had to pay for it. Back to the politics question. In the old days, about 30 years ago, when the world was black and white, when people wanted to do aspects of soft diplomacy, diplomats from different countries, they'd have their unofficial chats, the backdoor briefings and stuff. It would be at like a world leader's funeral, or in the back bar of a monetary summit. But nowadays, it's the Olympics that has replaced that as a happier venue. So the idea that this is going to be an apolitical Olympics is ridiculous. It's pure politics from the very start to the very end.
Well, we're already seeing a bunch of fault lines developing, one of them around one of the two openly gay U.S. athletes at the Olympics, Adam Rippon, being openly critical of Vice President Mike Pence and his support in the past for so-called gay conversion therapy. Rippon has refused an offer by Pence to meet with him. Can we expect this to be blown into something major by the establishment media?
Well, actually, Probably not to the extent that you'd expect. There's a reason for that. It's all very well for the media and celebrities to make a lot of noise about this kind of thing to their domestic audience. But the last thing they want is for this kind of stuff to go global, to create a more international incident. I mean, there are far too many opportunities for, what should I call them, less progressive nations to point out that they completely agree with Pence or what Pence had previously said. Which would end up pitting the U.S. media against an actual country that doesn't bend over backwards to appease the more liberalized mindset. And they're just not they're not brave enough for that kind of heat. So I really don't think this is going to be a huge issue.
Wow.
I think they'll try and sweep it a bit under the carpet.
That's a surprising answer, but I think you make a good point, because it's not like the rest of the world is totally on board with the social justice warrior agenda the United States.
I mean, even things that as conservatives we would consider, hey, you know, it's free country, do what you like. These kind of things for many countries around the world, it's not acceptable. I mean, there are countries that still imprison homosexuals. And for the world media to start, for the US media to start displaying this to the world, there's a good chance that they're going to be the actual target for other countries saying, well, why is this country saying this stuff? We don't want this kind of thing on our televisions. We don't want this kind of thing in our newspapers. And they really just don't have the courage. I mean, it's all well and good them shouting down Donald Trump and Mike Pence in the domestic market, but they really don't handle the heat well from abroad. It's not going to put them in a good position. So I think it will calm down quite well. I mean, Mike Pence has shown some real dignity in this. He's offered to, you know, he's pointing out that he's fully supportive. And I think it's the bigger thing to do is to.
Well, I mean, I mean, Pence reached out to Mr. Rippon. I mean, he made an overture to say, you know, we're 100% behind you.
Yeah.
But that doesn't seem to have mollified him. We'll see if your prediction that this isn't a big issue becomes true or not. Now let's turn to North Korea. The very fact. Sure. That they're sending a team south on the Korean Peninsula to compete in the Olympics in South Korea is quite a story by itself. But they're even joining with South Korea to field a joint women's hockey team. Is this a PR victory, a public relations victory for North Korea or for South Korea or for President Trump, for anybody, for nobody?
Well, it's a bit of a shame that this huge mark of progress has to be politicized. But the fact is that it is all about messaging and it is political. It's a win for everybody. I mean, North Korea is sending signals that it's ready to reintegrate to some extent. South Korea is showing North Korea they want to be unified with their northern neighbors. And I mean, this is just my opinion, but I think it's a victory for Trump, because there's no way this would have happened without his... should we call it interference? It's so many years of ignoring North Korea under the previous administrations and hoping nothing too bad would happen on their watch has made North Korea almost invisible to the rest of the world. I mean, we only ever heard about them when something particularly bad happened, which every 18 months or something. But now North Korea, it's front and center. So it's really an opportunity for them to, I don't want to say move out of the dark ages, but move out of the darkness, the veil that they've been behind. And so let's hope it becomes the first step in a long walk back to international friendship and relations.
Well, one wonders, though, we understand why North Korea is doing it. It represents some sort of an olive branch to the broader world, which is scared to death of the nuclear threat that they're developing. And for President Trump, you can argue whether it's a victory or not. You could make a case either way. But for South Korea, it seems to me that this new South Korean president, although he's not still so new, is a little bit a bit naive, I think, about the real intentions of North Korea. It seems like the South Korean government in general is insufficiently wary of North Korea, or is that just my own take on it?
No, you're probably not too wrong there. I mean, when they were having the initial discussions on this, it was made very, very clear by North Korea that discussion of any kind regarding nuclear proliferation was off the table and would result in immediate termination of communications. So perhaps there is a little bit of naivety here, thinking that if I can, let's just say maybe the South Korea is thinking that they could buddy up with North Korea and then sort of create a more united, not exactly a front, but a veneer against other countries, not in a threatening way, but to reinforce or to reassure North Korea that they are together, they are a unified Korean people. But perhaps you're right about the naivety there. I think it's going to take a lot more than a women's hockey team to bridge the gap.
I'm sure you're right. Now, speaking as a European, even though you Brits like to be distinguished from those who live on the
continent. No, I am European.
On the continent.
I am European. I am British. I'm just not part of the European Union.
You're not you're not continental, though that goes back from before the days of the European Union, where you wanted to be distinguished from those on the continent. But in any case, speaking then as a proud European, are you expecting public displays of discontent or even protest from European athletes who receive nothing but an onslaught of negative news from their media about Donald Trump?
Okay, so I'm imagining there will be not a single word out of place regarding other athletes, because they obviously they're amateur professional athletes, and they regard each other as peers and treat each other with respect. However, will there be inadvertent slights? Absolutely. There really will be. There'll be a lot of talk about how the Trump foreign policy is putting things at risk, how it's putting international relations at risk. There'll be talks about how wonderful the mass movement of people across the world is, especially for sports, which would be very much an agenda push. Each of the teams will have a certain political agenda that will be presented to them by their country that will involve talking points for press interviews, radio interviews, TV.
Right.
So there will absolutely be some political posturing. It certainly won't be against the athletes, though.
Well, certainly not. We wouldn't expect that. But then on top of all these other things, then there's the matter of transgender athletes at the Olympics. There's 13 of them this year, by most counts. This became an issue at the Summer Games 2 years ago in London. How are Olympic organizers handling that issue this year?
Well, it's only going to become a bigger issue. Now, how it used to be was when, I think it was 2004, when the Olympic Committee set out the guidelines for transgender athletes. So it would have to involve actual surgery. It would involve major hormone treatments. It involved them actually having lived as another gender for a certain period of time. But now the new ruling is just going to create far more issues. And it's that it's about nothing but hormone levels. So if somebody can demonstrate that they have had a certain hormone level, and actually Laura Volkovic goes into this very well in the in her article on this on Liberty Nation for the special edition. It basically means that now somebody can, literally identify, say I am this gender, and then show a record of certain hormonal levels over the period of a year. That is the only qualifying factor now, which seems madness when you consider the actual very real physiological differences for those who have grown up as, for example, a biological male and reached puberty as a biological male and then transitioned, which involves obviously a larger muscle mass, bone density, larger lungs, larger heart. It does give a quite an advantage, and I do feel it will be a detriment to women's sports, to be honest. It not hardly at all, to be fair, the other way around.
Right.
Because
nobody's concerned about women who become men competing among the men, but there is a great deal of concern about men who become women competing among the women.
Well, there's a clear physiological advantage, and it does make a difference. It really does in terms of, I mean, we just look at around the world at the different transgender folk who have taken part in different sporting events, and they're smashing records. It's ridiculous. But it's not just smashing records by an extra pound of weight, an extra fraction of a second. They're demolishing records. And this is because of physiology. I mean, it's the very reason that we have segregated sports teams. And this is putting it a real stress on women's sports. And it's such a shame, because in recent years, I feel that women's sports have actually become really, really good. They're super competitive.
Yes.
They're fantastic to watch. I mean, I know a lot of people joke about it, but they are really great, great sports personalities who do a lot in their local communities for their sports clubs, and the public image around the world is amazing. But with this shift, it's really could be a major issue, because I think what you're going to find is that people who are born women and compete as women are going to be struggling a hell of a lot, and it's really going to upset the value of the sport.
Well, I can say that you know, for speaking for myself, I, for example, find women's tennis to be even more interesting than men, because the rallies go longer.
Oh, yeah.
And you get 15, 20 shot rallies, whereas in men's tennis, it's more one player trying to overpower the other, which is interesting in itself. But and certainly when it comes to, for example, the gymnastics. I mean, I think I speak for a lot of people saying that the women's gymnastics is far more interesting than the men's. But again, that's just me. But you know, in all of this, as you said at the top of the podcast, that the Olympics have always been about politics, and there's been a very ugly history, which many people will tend to forget, and probably for good reason, because they want to think of the Olympics as being, you know, true to the standard of the world uniting under the banner of athletic competition. That's what those five rings, those five intertwining rings on the Olympic symbol are meant to designate. But I did a piece for the LibertyNation.com special edition on the Olympics entitled The Ugly History of Olympic Politics. And we look at 1936 and 1972 in Germany. We look at the 70s and 80s with the judging scandals, not to mention the doping scandals that involved, again, East Germans and others from the Soviet bloc. We're looking at two competitions in 1980 and 84 that were greatly compromised by the absence of first the U.S. in Moscow and then the Soviets in Los Angeles. Yeah. I mean, many times politics has upstaged the Olympic athletes themselves, you know, who spend countless lonely hours over many years training for their big moment on the world stage. And of course, as we mentioned, Germany being ground zero for much of the ugly political history of the Olympics. Yeah. It started in 1936 with Adolf Hitler and Jesse Owens
trying to push the Aryan race agenda, wasn't it?
Yes, I mean
the Aryan race. Yeah,
it was. And as I point out in the piece, Hitler had been emboldened by the recent victory of the German boxer Max Schmeling over the black American Joe Louis in a very, very famous and much ballyhooed heavyweight boxing match. That by the way was a loss that Louis would later avenge.
Yeah.
But the Führer set his sights on an international display of Aryan superiority, but Jesse Owens pretty much smashed that whole idea, didn't he?
Yes, he did. It's I mean, Germany has had an unfortunately awful history when it comes to the Olympics. As you mentioned it in your piece about the 1972 games as well, just I mean, it's supposed to be the cheerful games, wasn't it?
It was. That's what the, of course, that was the West German government trying to put on a good face for the world after the atrocities of World War II, not to mention World War I. And that was the Munich massacre when eight members of a Palestinian terrorist group, Black September, took nine Israeli athletes, coaches, and officials hostage. They murdered all of them and machine gunned to death the last five of them. I mean, that was so gruesome. It took West Germany many years to live that down. But then East Germany, their communist brethren on the other side of the Berlin Wall, they were at the heart of another Olympic scandal, that this one that sort of played out over many years based on judging.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. They were trying to rig the scores, weren't they?
Trying to rig the scores.
Yeah,
and
country, yeah.
I mean,
it
was so transparent that they gave their own countrymen over the top scores and then ridiculously low scores to all the other athletes, particularly Americans. And that ultimately forced judges from the West to overcompensate in the other direction, which sort of created some sort of false moral equivalency where, well, the East German judges may cheat, but the Western judges do too. And they sort of weren't left with any other choice in order to come to an equitable decision on the performance of any individuals.
Yeah.
So that thing played out over a long time. But then there was 1980, and that set in motion, you know, competing or back-to-back boycotts, first by the U.S., for the Moscow Games, because Jimmy Carter decided in his wisdom that the way to punish the Soviets for their invasion of Afghanistan in 1979 was to boycott the Summer Games. And oh, so predictably, of course, American, Russian athletes, Soviet athletes then boycotted the 1984 Games, which I was able to attend in Los Angeles, by the way. But you know, the credibility or the legitimacy of those two games were greatly compromised strictly because of, as you said, politics.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually wondering with the recent refusal to play against Israelis, if this might be rearing its ugly head at the Olympics for any reason this year.
Well, I think you're right. I think there's a real possibility of that now that Donald Trump has poked the bear by declaring Jerusalem to be the capital of Israel in the eyes of the U.S. and moving the U.S. embassy there. So you're right. That's another real fear, bringing back echoes to some degree of 1972 with the horrendous Munich massacre, which anyone who was alive for it, and you were at best knee-high to a grasshopper then, probably not even born.
I wasn't born then.
you weren't born, but we all, those of us who were and were of age, I was about 17 at the time, they will never forget that. But you've given us a pretty good rundown, I think between the two of us, a rundown on what we might expect in terms of politics at the Olympics and where we've come from in terms of the ugly history of Olympic politics. Mark, thanks for commandeering and steering this special edition of LibertyNation.com on the Olympics and politics. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That is Mark Angelides, UK editor and international correspondent for LibertyNation.com and maestro of Liberty Nation's special edition on the Olympics, up now. Don't miss it at LibertyNation.com. I'm Tim Donner, and this is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com.